Well, talking to me today is one of our best-loved actresses, but she's an actress of such consummate artistry that it's often difficult to tell when she is acting. She's been in many television programmes and dozens of films, but I have to mention two personal favourites of my own, the performance she gave in A Kind of Loving and her magnificent television appearance in A Cream Cracker Under the Settee by Alan Bennett. She's, of course, Thora Heard. Thora, your parents were in the theatre, so did you not get any choice as to whether you were going to be an actress?
Well, if I say I didn't get any choice, Robin, it's because they didn't want me to go into the business. You see, oh no. My father thought it was far too precarious a business, and they'd really been in it for forever. They only went to live in Morecambe because they'd been married nearly 6 years, and my mother wouldn't have any children until they could be settled and not somewhere one week and some the next. Do you see? So it was, no, there's many things. And of course, I did do quite a few things before I went into rep. I was in a draper's shop. I love that. I love being a shop assistant. Oh, I really do. Yes. I worked for my father on the pier because I'd taken shorthand and typing at night school. And so I was in his office on the pier.
What did your father do exactly?
Well, my father was a comedian in the business and then became business manager. And this was all in the touring days. Then when he came to Morecambe, he was manager of the Royalty Theatre, where I started rep, incidentally. Manager of the Royalty Theatre. The house next door went in with his wage. So that's why I'm such a swank about Six Cheapside Morecambe that they've knocked down. I thought it was too important to knock down. But it's all the streets gone. And then from the Royalty, he moved to the Central Pier.
Now, how did you go into rep?
Whenever they wanted extra people at the rep, they used to ask one or two of us to oblige. And they were doing Ian Philpott's Yellow Sands. And there are twins in that. One has all the lines, and the other one is the echo. I was the echo, which was lovely because I had nothing to learn. If the one said, "Happy birthday, Cousin Jennifer," I only had to say, "Cousin Jennifer." And so if she didn't get it right, I didn't. So that was my entrance to rep.
Right. Now, your first tingle is of children at play.
Oh, yes.
Is that a tingle from your own childhood, or does that belong to your grandchildren, or what?
Well, you know, I'd love to say it's my own childhood, but the whole thing of children, the noise they make, the way they are, they're free, they don't care. I wish I knew a lot of big words to describe this, Robin, but the freedom of children in a schoolyard, you know, they've been doing their sums, there's playtime and the bell goes all out, and then you hear this wonderful noise. I'm sure you've passed a school when it was playtime. In the day, all of us on our way to business and things. I stand because I think it's marvellous. It really makes my... Ooh, it's lovely. It's lovely.
So you started your career, unlike your parents, who began in London and moved to Morecambe. You started in Morecambe and then went to London.
Just a line to take you back a minute. My mother lived in, well, born in Morecambe. Oh. And my mother always sang, "I know that my Redeemer liveth from the Messiah." 17 times she sang that at the Green Street Wesleyan, you see. But my father ran away from home in Todmorden, which in those days was half in Lancashire, half in Yorkshire, the town hall, till these stupid boundary lines have been altered. Because when people used to say, "Where do you come from, Mr. Heard?" And he would say, "I come from Todmorden, the Lancashire half." He always said that, isn't he? So they met, of course, you know, on tour. And when my mother was leaving, the minister at the Wesleyan Chapel said to her, "Now, don't forget, you know, if you're ever in any trouble of any sort, we would always welcome you back." So she never was, that I knew of, but when she went back to Morecambe, the only trouble she'd met was my father, who only proposed after Johnny had waited with flowers four nights running at the stage door. You see, they used to do that in those days of the theatre.
Yes.
You know, and this squire's son waited four nights with flowers. So on the fifth day, my dad took my mum on a picnic and proposed, and that was it. And that's why I'm here sitting, delighted to talk to you.
So how did you come to go to London? Did the war cause that?
No, or your career? No. I didn't have very big parts in rep, and I was still getting a pound. And one week, there was a play called As You Are, And the character woman's part in it, of about 65, was the mother-in-law of the girl and the mother of the son, do you see? And it was one of those, the moment she didn't get her own way, the heart attack came on, you know. Oh, yes. It's coming on.
Yes.
Oh, right. Well, on the Tuesday, they were very excited because George Formby was in box A or something. And after the show, he and Beryl, that was his first wife, came round. And he said, you know, to simplify it, he said, oh, what do you think you were going to in this play tonight? We're going to make a film of this, which they did call Turned Out Nice Again, if you remember.
Oh, yes.
So I'm going to tell them at the studios to come up and see you. Well, it's a bit big news, that, isn't it?
Mm.
You know. Oh, the casting director came on the Friday, saw the play, took me out to supper. I was so excited I only had a Horlicks. Oh, that's the truth. They simply said, well, this is silly because you're too young. You can make up for it for the theatre. Oh. But you can't, you see, for films. We have plenty of ladies the proper age, but we're going to put you under contract. So they did. And that was the beginning, wasn't it?
Your film career.
Oh, my film career. In fact, I nearly didn't get the first film because it was a Will Hay called Black Sheep of Whitehall. And they kept saying, Will, would you see this girl's test? And of course he said, no, I want somebody who's known. You can understand it. Mm. And after testing, he said, I'll see it. Now, the casting director told me this, so I take it for the truth. He looked at the test and he said, what a face, send her a telegram. And that's how I got into films.
Mm. Well, now, you said your husband was in the RAF, so this must account for your next Tingle choice.
Oh, it does, it does, it does.
Which is it's their own march, right?
Mm. And he was in it all those years. And as a civilian, you see, there again, while I was in rep, having left the co-op, I was in the billeting office. All the characters you ever want to play come in a visiting office, in the billeting office. Mm. So I have a love for it because of that. I mean, really, that I would not just do it at home. I'd probably sit down and listen to this. Great, that reminds me of so many things, Robin. If we were sitting here all day, I could just tell you yarns about when I was in the billeting office at the RAF. No, but it was great, and it does remind me of Scotty and all the rest of him, and when that comes on, I shall say to him, Jimmy, are you listening? I'll say, now you're listening, Scotty. That was for you.
Right. Do you feel, I mean, you're such a wonderfully natural actress, and as I said earlier in the programme, looking at you, in things like that Alan Bennett play, that one woman 45-minute stint, which you did so magnificently, one seems to be looking at just at a real person. Now, I just wondered, though, if you feel sometimes that you're a little typecast, because you very often play North Country ladies.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever wanted to sort of break out and do something more classical?
For a lot of years in my life, I suppose it's been said to everybody who's in the business, somebody says, oh, I would like to see you play, boom, whatever it is.
Mm.
But really, the number of people used to say to me, I'd love to see you play the nurse in Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, yes.
And I have to say to you, really, Robin, I used to think, well, why? Beautifully done by Dame Flora Robson, Dame Edith Evans. You know, why? Anyhow, when they were doing them once a month, if you remember on television, Frederick Messina was presenting one a month. They asked me to play the nurse, and I did refuse it. And I think they thought it was rather strange anybody would refuse it. And I said, well, truthfully, I've no wish to be compared with people who are so brilliant at this. And they said, there's more than that, isn't there? And they asked me to lunch, and I insisted I bought the lunch, which I must say I didn't do, now I get to this stage, but I wanted to. I said, A, I think, because the nurse is supposed in history to have suckled Juliet 14 years before. She's only 14 in the real story.
Mm-hmm.
And I could never wonder why it was played so old, you see.
Yes.
And to which they said, well, you can forget that bit, because we're casting her 50, you see. So that took my breath away a little bit, you see. And then I said, well, let me be honest. They're brilliant actresses I would be trying to follow. And people are bound to say, well, I wonder why they cast her. And said, that is nonsense, else we wouldn't have asked you. So eventually I did say I would think about it again, and that at 10:03 I would ring them up, knowing how long it would take to get to the centre. And I would say yes or no. And the director came on and he said, well, am I a lucky director this morning? And I said, well, that's up to you. I've decided I'll have a try. And I really loved it.
All right. Well, I don't think there's any doubt in my mind as to why our next extract gives you a tingle, because it's the sound of a pit orchestra tuning up.
Oh, Robin. Every show I've ever been in, I haven't done a lot of tour in my life. Yeah, and it's when I hear the orchestra tuning up. And this was even before I knew that I would marry a man from the pit orchestra, because when I met Scotty, he had come to Morecambe with the 16-piece orchestra to the Winter Gardens. And I thought, and I'm not losing him. I thought, nobody else is getting him either. It's smashing.
What instrument did Scotty play in the orchestra?
Well, he was a percussionist, but in your words, a man, he was the drummer. But he did a lot of the arrangements for the orchestra. Anyway, I can't tell. I nearly enjoyed it as much as the show. You know, and all the brass going up a little scale and that, and the strings. I think, you're looking at me as though I'm a bit balmy, but I think it's marvellous.
And what, do you want any particular music to follow that?
Well, I mean, when I was at Drury Lane, you'd imagine the size of the orchestra there.
Yeah.
And when we were doing No, No, Nanette, well, that was in the band room underneath, you see. And my dressing room was near to the stage. Oh, I used to think it's a shame to take the money. This it thrills me so much. Thrills me, excites me, moves me. Oh, I don't know what. But I think it's great. So, well, can we have a couple of bars of No, No, Nanette then?
An orchestra tuning up and part of No, No, Nanette. Has Hollywood ever made any overtures to you?
No. Now, where would I fit in Hollywood? I couldn't see anything that could have been but a tree.
Well, they do make films about English people.
Well, they do now,
with fog,
yes.
And but horses clopping around,
yes,
and things like that.
And it's so nice. I mean, this last lot of Oscars. Oh, I was applauding, you know, to think that the two British women got my thought, oh, marvellous. But both great actresses.
Do you listen to much music in your own home?
Yes, and my husband is classically music, he loves. So there's always something on in the house.
And does some music have a profound effect on you?
Some of the tunes, I really have to go out the room. There are certain tunes that emotionally move me so much. And I could give you 100 if we were sitting here, you know, for a week.
Give me one, then.
Well, there's Mozart's C major piano concerto, slow movement. If I'm washing up to that, there's as much water left in the tin when I poured it out. Oh, don't. And that beginning of it, you know, it is beautiful. It is beautiful. In fact, you know when actresses have to be emotional, people have said to me many a time, was it glycerin and what did they do? There's never any glycerin with me for the simple reason. I only have to think of certain things in life, not always just music.
Thank you.
Starry Pariah with the English Chamber Orchestra playing part of the slow movement of Mozart's 21st Piano Concerto in C.
I'm nearly off when you say the title.
You say that people's conduct in life can move you. Do your fellow actors move you? I mean, are there any great performances that you particularly remember giving you a tingle that you've seen in the theatre, or people you've actually worked with in a play or a show?
Oh, well, of course. It would be very clever, Dick, if I said, no, I can't remember anybody ever moving me. Oh, yes, and scenes I've done with people, but there's so very, very often that you see the way somebody delivers a line. And it's such a help to you. The same, don't you think, with comedy? Your father, I'm sure, would tell you this was so. That so often in comedy, you're given a line that is a whooper. But my father, again, in his knowledge of the theatre, told me, always see that line is right for you. Now, particularly in a Blackpool season comedy, I would look at that line and think, that's better from the son. And when I would say, could the son have this line? They would say, well, Thor, it's a big laugh. And they'd say, but we're going to get two. If you see what I do when he says that and gets the laugh. Do you know what I mean? I mean, not only me, anybody that's in the comedy business would tell you that is what you can do. So I don't think always it's the line. And certainly emotionally, it could be a look. Or could be in anything that sets me off.
Well, I think a lot of actors could learn that lesson. I think that's a very, very wise, if generous-sounding rule. What's your funniest memory of things going wrong in the theatre? Everyone has an anecdote about something terrible happening in some play or movie they've been in.
To me, do you mean to me? Well, of course, there are so many. But you see, going back and telling you in rep, I was usually the maid. Because why? Because the maid was the least important part. You follow. I can carry trays of silverware on a stage 25 different ways if you wish, including the trip, including the banging it down. Yeah, because I was always carrying the tray on, you see. And one week I was paid. Now, I used to rehearse in my lunchtime. That's how big the parts were when I was with the RAF. So I get on a bus that left the Battery at 12:30, got outside the Clarendon 12:31. I'm on. I'm at the theatre at 12:35. I'm rehearsing. My mother having given me a plate of sandwiches she'd made next door. And I'd done my rehearsing and back to work. And on this particular night, there used to be, actors will know what I mean, that when your part was small, you didn't have a script given. You had the cues on a bits of paper, right, which is what I had, right. So I go on, somebody at the door, sir, boom. And as I'm coming off, I see behind the settee that there's a ball of paper crushed up, you see, and I thought, well, it just makes her a better maid. I picked it up and took it off, you see, and threw it in the bin in my dressing room, which I shared, may I say? And in a minute, there's a knock on the dressing room door. Are you there, Face? Because he used to call me Face when I was younger. Are you there, Face? Yeah. You haven't picked a piece of paper up off the stage. I said, well, I did, really. Oh, well, that's it. I mean, there's no need for Act 3. You've only picked that flaming plot up. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. So what I had to do, I went back up.
Well, this was something absolutely essential that they found on the stage, was it?
I couldn't find it in about three pages.
And you'd moved it.
And that's certainly a good maid in the house, not going to leave a ball of paper on the floor. It's a full story. So I go on, and he said, well, get yourself on the stage somehow. Well, the boy is just telling this girl, you see, I can't be as much as I'd like to be because of your husband. And I walk on through the door, put my hand on the back of the settee and said, oh, sorry, sir, dropped the roll of paper where it was and went off the other side. Now, the awful thing was the two, the Juve leader and the other one, don't know which play they're in now. I said, well, why's she come on? Oh, dear. Oh, yes.
The next tingle, The Lord's My Shepherd.
Oh, yes, beautiful.
Now, this is because you have a strong Christian faith, yes?
Yes, I have.
Why this particular psalm?
Well, why this particular sound, and not just for me, because I don't know whether the listeners are aware, but on Praise Be, the most popular hymn ever asked for in thousands is The Old Rugged Cross. And number two is The Lord is My Shepherd, to Crimond, not St. James. And it's beautiful. It is just beautiful. And to hear it at the end of a big, well, shall we say, 11th of November, or one of those things at the Albert Hall. I think it's most moving. And I think you'll listen to what it is when it's sung.
It's a tingle of tranquility, then.
Well, that would do.
The Lord's My Shepherd to the tune of Crimond, sung at the Remembrance Day service at the Albert Hall. Your faith has been with you all your life. Were you brought up in a Christian background, or did you discover it later?
Oh, no. You see, now you know. We're very fortunate. We're interviewed a lot for magazines, papers, anything, or on television and so on. And usually about the third question people will say to me, when did you find God, Thora? Or how did you find God? Or so, and it's a simple answer I have. Well, I never knew when he wasn't there. You know, this is just a little tidbit. I had four uncles who were trawler men for Morecambe Shrimps. Bearded, navy blue gowns, and trawlers, open trawlers then, not, you know, like today. And my Uncle Robert had to stop trawling because of, well, it was called rheumatism then. Now I'm quite sure, having got it myself, it was arthritis. But he was sitting in our kitchen one morning with the gansy, the beard, and a neighbour came in for either an egg cup full of tea or something, because people were always coming in to my mother, can you lend my mother two candles? Have you a piece of brown paper and string? It was a glorious childhood I had. And she just turned in, the neighbour, and not being comic, she looked and she says, hey, Robert, that does look like Jesus. And he did. Now, I would be five. Now, oh, Robert, you look like Jesus. Every night when I said my prayers, when my mother used to sit on the bed and we'd kneel, my brother and I, gentle Jesus, meek and mild. And I don't say this in any comic way. I always said it to a man in a gansy and a beard and a stick. So this was my Jesus, yes, till I was about 11. And when I was about 11, I was beginning to think, I mean, Sunday school, chapel and all that, and I thought, come on, Thor, you know, because the little tracks, Jesus never looks like that, I know. Facially, yes, like me Uncle Robert, is what she meant. Mm. And I said my prayers that night, and I looked at my mother and I said, Jesus doesn't really look like me Uncle Robert, does he? I was a bit upset about this, Robin. Yeah. I'd had this idea so long. And my mother just took my face in her hands, kissed me on the forehead and said, who says he doesn't?
Oh, wonderful.
Which answers everything, doesn't
that's
it?
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Onward Christian Soldiers.
Oh, everybody knows I love that.
Well, I love it. I love it too.
Oh, yes.
And we're going to finish off with that.
When I was a kid and I lived in Cheapside in Morecambe, down at the bottom was a little baker's. And my mother used to say, go and get sixpenny worth of tea cake and don't stand with the Salvation Army too long, because they stood just outside Dora's, this little baker's. And a lot of the kids used to stand. I never followed them in the street. You usually see kids skipping after them. But, and I never realised I was going to have so much to do with the Salvation Army, because when I did the comedy show Hallelujah, they were all the help you could ever ask for. The only complaint was you don't do things as funny as they happen in the Sally Ann. Do you know? Mm. And they know I call them a Sally Ann. Now, I'd go to their carolcade each year, do a bit of announcing and all this on stage. And they sing that. I can't describe it to you. The tambourines, the clapping, the, and really, you're onward. You're onward. And I'm not morbid. We all have to die, but I certainly want that on the day of my funeral, because it's, it is, it didn't inspire anybody.